Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And maybe a rose by any other name doesn't smell as sweet. Or what's the difference between a Tanya and a LaTanya? Or Juan and Juan and John? In the newest episode of Freakonomics, Stephen Dubner and his team set out to find out what's in a name and whether that first choice your parents make can actually shape many things about your destiny. Stephen Dubner of Freakonomics and Freakonomics Radio joins me now. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Brian. Thanks.
And as we get into this, we do want to open up the phones. Listeners, have you ever experienced the importance of your own first names in particular? Anyone listening now actually change your name in order to fit in more or to stand out more or for any other reason? 212-433-WNYC. We're going to be talking about cultural assimilation or distinction from cultural assimilation as our main topic here. Did you ever change your name from LaTanya to Sue or, you know, whatever? 212-433-WNYC. Or how do you pick your children's name with respect to the idea of fitting in or standing out? 212-433-9692. And let's start with a name randomly selected, Stephen. And because you've got that name and so does your Freakonomics co-author, Steve Levitt, it's not a particularly special name in the U.S. of A. What do you think it says about you?
Well, for both of us, actually, so I'm a couple years older than Levitt, and I have the PH spelling, which is often mistaken for Stefan, especially these days because there aren't that many around. And Levitt has the V spelling, the more common. And at one point, we were, if you combine those, it was one of the most popular names in America for boys, probably top three or four. And what happens is most popular names start out, these days at least, in the last 30 years that we've looked at the data, most popular names start out among the kind of high-end, high-education families. They get popular there, and then they get adopted by other people, and then they move down the income and education level, and then at which point the top stop using them, yeah. And then they bottom out. So Stephen is one of those names that peaked right around when we were. So we were kind of at the tail end of the popularity, which connotes that our parents were just like everybody. They wanted to latch on with a popular name.
Weren't Michael and Jennifer the number one boys and girls names for like 20 years?
Yeah, you know, Michael. So first of all, one big thing to say, girls' names turn over faster, more vividly, more robustly than boys' names. Huh. Even though there is more boy turnover now than there used to be, uh-huh. You could look at the list of top boys' names for years and years, and there was a little bit of change between Michael and Christopher, and now they really have loosened up. But girls' names just jet through. And so, again, keeping in line with what I was saying about how names cycle from the top of the income spectrum down, names like Tiffany and Brittany and Ashley that now, if you look at them, tend to be lower income names, they all began at the top and not that long ago. Then they move fast.
And you've got some pretty interesting firsthand accounts of names on the podcast, like you were talking about how you, as a Stephen with a PH, sometimes get called Stefan. Then there's this guy.
My name is Stefan, and I'm coincidentally African-American. So people automatically assume that my name is Stefan when they're reading it.
And so there's a cultural assumption.
Oh, that's interesting. So honestly, you know, people call – because my name is spelled S-T-E-P-H-E-N, a lot of people call me Stefan or Stefan also. But that's not because I'm black, which I happen to not be. It's just because they have no idea how to pronounce Stephen. So that's one thing you find is that there are a lot of generational things too. I mean, you know, WNYC has a lot of listeners of all ages, but we've got a lot of listeners who are, you know, let's say 45 and up. There are a lot of names among that crowd that do not exist or barely exist. My wife's name is Ellen. When you meet an Ellen under 30, it's time to pop a champagne cork. There's huh. Ellen, Carol, Nancy, Susan. There are waves uh-huh. of names that generationally peak and rise, and then there are those that cycle through. My son's name is Solomon. Not that it's very common now, but it's a little bit more common now than it was 30, 40 years ago. Then you go back 80 years and you find all these names that a lot of New Yorkers name their kids, Max and Sadie and, you know, all the deli owners basically.
Andrew in Santa Monica, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how are you, Brian? Good morning.
Good. Is Andrew your real name?
No, actually my first name is Andreas and my last name is Goebel. I am actually direct lineage blood relation to Joseph Goebbels, who's my great uncle. We moved to America.
So wait, you changed your first name, but you kept Goebbels?
No, I switched my last name when I was 18 because I was told that I probably would never get into a university or probably find a job. So, but working in finance and real estate as Andreas, I did not get as many clients. But once I switched my name to Andrew, it was nonstop. So I guess in that scenario, I kind of chided my family by switching my name, but I told them that there was really no positive prospects being a Goebbels in this country. There really isn't.
I'm sure there would have been some blowback to that. But the first name story is really the heart of part of what you looked at Freakonomics, Stephen, changing his name from Andreas to Andrew. And I want to play a 30-second clip of your co-author, Steve Levitt, who was looking specifically at the effect of names on African Americans and what's been found about that in studies.
We didn't really care about black names, per se. What Roland and I were trying to get at was black culture. So the idea was we knew that we observed really big differences in economic outcomes for African Americans and for whites. We know we observed really big cultural differences between African Americans and whites. And the question was, is there any causal link between those two? Could it be that somehow black culture was interfering with black economic success?
And I think by black culture in that context, he means names that are identifiably black, correct?
Yeah. So, you know, a few decades ago, black families in America really changed almost en masse naming patterns. They used to, blacks and whites used to name their kids pretty much the same thing. And then for whatever reason, it may have been the Black Power movement, it may have been a lot of different things. We can speculate. Black names became what we now think of as distinctively black names. Not all black families, but a lot. And so one thing you want to look at when you're trying to look at economic outcomes, there's a big black-white gap in this country still in terms of education, in terms of income, healthcare, and so on. And you want to see what's causing it because you want to fix it. And so one thought would be, well, if having a distinctively black name is a penalty in the job market, it would be good to know because at the very least, you can change your name. So Levitt and Roland Fryer, an economist at Harvard that Levitt mentioned in that clip there, they did a very clever study. They looked at names data from California over a span of many years to see if a child with a distinctively black name grows up and compare, let's say, 1,000 of those kids to 1,000 kids just like them in terms of their parents and neighborhood and so on, but they have more typical, quote, white names. Is that black name a penalty? And it turns out no. In the data, the answer is a firm no. It turns out that the kind of family who's more likely to give their kid a distinctively black name tends to be the kind of family that doesn't value education as much, let's say, where the kids don't attain as much education and therefore income. But it's not the name that's causing the effect. Now, if you say that, people go nuts because everybody has an example, just like Andreas, who just called Andrew. Everybody has an example of how a name does affect your outcome. So here's the bottom line, I think, here is this. A first name is incredibly unimportant as an indicator of your actual destiny, unless your first name is really important for your destiny. And you can make an argument that on the micro level, it can really matter.
Well, let's hear another story from a caller on this. Here's Abdel. Abdel, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So what's your story?
Well, my first name is Abdel, and I noticed that when I used to work in the medical industry, when we would have the trade shows, my managers would always tell me to just change my name to Abe. The reason was is it would be a conversation starter in the wrong direction. They would ask me where my name stemmed from, what my background was, and it wouldn't really focus on the equipment that we were trying to promote. So a lot of the time, they were changing my name to Abe, and even got to a point that some of my business cards later on were changed to Abe Hizzini instead of Abdel Hizzini.
Yeah, I think that so Abdel or Abe, whatever you want to go by today, makes the good point that if you are of the opinion that your name is holding you back, and it sounds like Abdel was kind of, you know, forced or encouraged to make the change, the easiest thing in the world is to call yourself something different. It is incredibly easy. Now, you could say, oh, my Facebook page and all my friends and my mailing list. You know what? Honestly, the costs to changing your name in this country particularly are incredibly low. So people will find – here's the way I look at it. A lot of people want to look at the data that we say generally shows that your name doesn't affect you, your life outcome, and say, yeah, but I know the case, or for me. And I think this is a fundamental thing of how we look at the world at large and data in particular, is when there's data in the aggregate, we know that it represents reality for the most part. And yet we know that personally it doesn't jibe up with our experience. I like to think of this example. On average, the adult population of humankind, on average, has one breast and one testicle. However, most people you know don't have one breast and one testicle. So aggregates can be misleading, but they can also be a helpful way to kind of judge. And I think for people who are distraught about a name that their parents may have given them, you know, there are easy options out there to change.
And you spoke to another researcher, LaTanya Sweeney, who found that African American names mean something else online when it comes to Google. Here's an excerpt.
We began focusing on LaTanya versus Tanya. And what we found in each of those cases was if you had LaTanya with a last name, you got an ad suggesting that you had an arrest record. And if you typed in Tanya with a last name, you didn't. And then Adam jumps to this conclusion. He says, oh, I get it. They're coming up. The arrest ads are coming up when there's a black sounding name.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, that's impossible. That's crazy talk.
Impossible. Crazy talk from the Freakonomics Radio podcast. Stephen Dubner, the host, my guest, except not so crazy, right?
Not so crazy. And honestly, this is a fascinating story. So I don't mean to promote the show more than you're already promoting it for us. But I would really encourage anybody who's interested in this to listen to the whole podcast, because it's an amazing story about how a scholar discovered something just by accident, seemed too weird and bad to be true, and then harnessed all the data she could and all the thinking she could to prove that it was true. Now, I should also be quick to point out, it's very hard to say who's, quote, guilty here of matching up black-sounding names with ads for arrest records. It might be Google somehow. It might be the ad sponsor or the client who bought the ad somehow. But it also might be us, because the way algorithms work is the more you click on something, the more heavily weighted it becomes. But the fact is this. LaTanya Sweeney, a computer scientist and kind of government policy wonk at Harvard, whose name is an African-American name, LaTanya, even though she'd never been arrested, found that when you Google her name, you get served ads offering those arrest records. And that leads to a whole discussion about the possible downside of, yes, having a distinctively African-American name. You can imagine a human resources person looking at two candidates, pulling up one name, seeing arrest record, not even clicking on it, and there is no arrest record, and having it count against you, which is a real detriment.
Ronaldo in Maplewood, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ronaldo.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to mention to you guys that growing up as a kid here in New Jersey, there weren't too many Hispanics back in the late 70s, early 80s. And my dad called me, you know, he gave me his name, which is Reynaldo. And as a kid, I hated my name so much growing up, because people would just call me Ray. Mm-hmm. But now, as an adult, I think I've been very successful. I like my name. I like to identify myself as a Latino, and I don't even call myself, when I present myself, I don't introduce myself as Ray or Reynaldo. I actually introduce myself as Reynaldo. You know, hello, my name is Reynaldo.
Mm-hmm. You grew into your name. I mean, honestly, that's why parents give you a name. They don't, you know, we parents, we're incredible narcissists. We like to tell ourselves we're giving the kid a name for the kid's sake, but we give it for our sake. What you name your kid says a lot more, a lot about you, about your parents, about the parents, about their political affiliation even. We talk about in the podcast, you can identify political patterns about your ethnic and racial, your religious. And really, I think, and then there are the whole category of aspirational names. You know, there are parents who name their kids President and Harvard and so on. And so, Reynaldo, congratulations. You lived up to your parents' dreams.
Yeah. And you also looked at how different groups of people name their kids along political lines. You just referred to that. So conservative versus liberal parents, is there much of a difference in the kinds of baby names that Democrats and baby Republicans have?
There is, yeah. So it turns out that especially what you'd call high-end, meaning high-income liberals, tend to be the most divergent in these patterns. So if you look at the middle, Republican and conservative names are not that different. As you get higher up in income, though, they both become a little bit more differentiated. And high-end liberals in particular go for a very different kind of girl name. They tend to have a lot of what's called schwa, the phonetic component schwa at the end. So Ella, Amelia, Ariella. The boys' names tend to be a bit softer as well, Joshua and so on. And then on the conservative side, even though it's not as pronounced, you do find more kind of harder consonants. A Kurt would be a Conrad, Carter. These are names, even though it was a Democratic president.
And with Johnny Cash in mind, you mentioned a study in your piece that boys with feminine names act up more in school.
This is a kind of study that is fun and cute and I think a little bit worthwhile, but I wouldn't put a whole lot of weight into it. So basically, you find that there are some correlations where certain kinds of names tend to suggest certain kinds of behavior, and we pay some knowledge to that, but it's not so pronounced.
And we will have to leave it there. Freakonomics Radio is on tonight at 8. Stephen Dubner, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Ryan.
Easy for a boy named Sue. Well, I grew up quick and I grew up mean. My fists got hard, my wits got keen. Roamed from town to town to hide my shame. But I made me a vow to the moon and stars. I'd search the honky-tonks and bars and kill that man and give me that awful name.